title of this session is Activating Your Success Mechanism. We've talked up to now about some of the characteristics of peak performing men and women. We've talked about the first characteristic in that they have high feelings of self-worth, self-liking, and self-acceptance. We've talked about the second characteristic in that they accept total responsibility for their life and the consequences of all their actions. And these two characteristics, as we know, go hand to hand to form the foundation of peak performance. The third characteristic we talked about was mental programming, the fact that peak performance men and women always keep their eye on the ball. They always keep their thoughts and their words and their mental pictures consistent with the direction that they want to go and with the people that they want to be, because they know that they become what they think about. In this session, we're going to talk about goal setting. Goal setting is perhaps the most vital and important skill of all peak performance, all high achievement, and all self-motivation. In every single study that has been done at Harvard University, MIT, Cornell, the studies of Dr. David McClelland, the studies of Abraham Maslow, the studies of Hertzberg and McGregor, every single one of them agree on one single fact, and that is that every peak-performing man and woman is an obsessive goal setter. They are motivated by compelling, burning internal goals. And surprisingly enough, if any individual, even a person who has not achieved at a high level ever before in their life, begins becoming a systematic, habitual goal setter and writes and thinks and talks about their goals on an ongoing basis, their levels of performance and achievement improve dramatically and almost immediately. We know that in the studies of all high-performing men and women, they all have goals. We know that the subconscious mind, because of the law of subconscious activity, begins to go to work immediately to bring the goals into reality. It goes to work to make us more alert and aware of opportunities to achieve our goals. It goes to work to bring us ideas. It goes to work to bring us motivation and incentives and insights. So our question over and over again is, why is it that so few people have goals? People have been told all their lives they're supposed to have goals. Why is it that so few people have them? We know that less than 5% of people walking around, some people say less than 3%, actually have goals. The vast majority have no goals at all. Less than 1%, I think, write their goals down. For instance, in 1953 at Yale University, they did a study amongst the graduating seniors, and they asked them several questions, one of which was, have you set clear, specific goals for your life, and have you written them down, and have you made plans to accomplish them? They found that only 3% of the graduating seniors of Yale University in 1953 had written out their goals and made plans to accomplish them. In 1973, 20 years later, they went back and they interviewed the surviving members of that graduating class, and they found, astonishingly enough, that the 3% who had set goals when they left Yale University were worth more in financial terms than the entire other 97% put together 20 years later. One of the most astonishing longitudinal studies ever done, and it's consistent with every other study that we've looked at. You can take a look at people and hold constant for intelligence, for grade level averages, for family background, for physical appearance, and you find over and over again that it is intense goal orientation that marks the winners in every single area. We know that when we program a goal into our brain, we have a cybernetic goal-seeking function, almost like a heat-seeking missile, that begins to move us automatically and rapidly toward its accomplishment. We know that the human being is built as a goal-seeking mechanism, that unless we have goals, we simply go around in circles in our lives. We simply drift with the tide, if you like, and end up nowhere. That when we set goals, we go straight and true. We develop purpose. We develop direction. We develop focused and channeled energy. And we accomplish more in a short time with goals than we could accomplish in years without them. Charlie Tremendous Jones has an analogy which he uses. He says that every human being has both a failure mechanism and a success mechanism. And the failure mechanism goes off automatically. That in the absence of the success mechanism, people just automatically fail and go nowhere with their lives. But he says that the success mechanism is triggered by a goal. And that every time we think about a goal, talk about our goal, visualize our goal, or write our goal down, we are pushing on the success mechanism, and we are triggering ourselves toward high accomplishment. The great tragedy, of course, is that the great majority of people never think of this, and if they do think of it, they lack the self-discipline, they lack the will, they lack the self-confidence or the belief to set goals and to stay with them until they accomplish them. We also know, as Elmer Letterman said many years ago, that the distinguishing characteristic of all high-performing men and women, more than any other thing, is intensity of purpose, the ability to set a clear, burning purpose and commit themselves to it unequivocally. Bunker Hunt, the multi-billionaire who rose from bankrupt cotton farmer at the age of 32 to one of the world's richest men and died worth between $5 and $6 billion in the late 70s, was once interviewed on television, and he was asked, "Mr. Hunt, what advice or recommendations could you give to other people who want to be financially successful in life?" "Son," he said, "I've established hundreds of corporations in my life, and I've made billions of dollars. And I've found that it's not difficult to be successful. There's only two things that are required. First of all, you must decide exactly what it is that you want to accomplish. Most people never take that step of deciding exactly what it is they want in life." He said, "The second thing that you have to do is you have to determine the price you're going to have to pay to accomplish exactly what it is that you want, and then resolve to pay that price and to make the sacrifices that are necessary to accomplish it. That's all that's necessary." He said, "Determine what you want, and then resolve to pay the price to get it." Most people never take those two steps, and that is why most people live lives of extended mediocrity and retire poor, if not flat broke and dependent upon others. Well, we know that this is true. We've heard this 1,000 times. We've been told all our lives that we have to set goals. Our question in the psychology of achievement has been, why is it that so few people set goals? And I think we've come to four conclusions. The first conclusion is that they don't understand the importance of goals. We find in the research that young men and women who begin setting goals very early in life invariably come from families where the importance of goals is emphasized, that the discussion that takes place around the family dinner table is one of the most powerful formative influences in our lives, and that if we come from a family where our parents do not have goals of their own and do not talk about goals and do not encourage us to set goals and do not talk about other people outside the family circle who have goals and who are moving toward higher levels of achievement, then we can very easily grow up with the idea that goals are not even a part of a normal existence. A perfect example of this, of course, is the fact that we now have 3 and 4 generations of welfare families in America. Families where one generation has raised children that have grown up and gone on welfare and has had children which have grown up and gone on welfare, and they in turn have had children and grown up and gone on welfare, and there are even examples of 5th generation welfare recipients. For 5 solid generations, the talk around the dinner table has been about receiving welfare. And the individuals have grown up as welfare recipients in their self-concept without ever understanding that there could be something different. They are, in effect, mentally crippled in that it is inconceivable to them that it is possible to be totally self-sufficient in our society. The second reason why people don't set goals is because they don't know how. One of the greatest tragedies of our educational system is that you can take 15 to 18 years of education in our system and never once receive 1 hour of instruction on how to set goals. And the reason for this is that most of the people who establish what is to be taught in the schools are not goal-oriented themselves. Yet we find that in certain schools and in certain school systems where goal-setting programs have been introduced in the grade 1 and grade 2 and grade 3 levels, that young people become so excited about setting goals, even if the goal is only to increase their scores by 5 or 10% over the course of a semester, or to be on time every single day in the course of a month, children become so excited about achieving goals that by the 3rd or the 4th grade, they love to go to school, they get the very best grades, they are never absent, they're excited about themselves and about their lives, and the kindest thing that we can do for our children is to encourage our children to set worthwhile and realistic goals from an early age. The third reason why people don't set goals, according to our research, is the fear of rejection. We talked about this earlier, and we know that the fear of rejection is caused by destructive criticism and is manifested in our fear of the criticism of others. Many people hold back from setting goals because they have found that every time they do set a goal, somebody steps up and tells them that they can't achieve it, that they will lose their money, they will lose their time, they will lose their efforts or their investment, and that they shouldn't waste their time in the first place. We've had many people who have gone out of this course excited about new goals and new directions for their lives, and the very first thing that happens when they go home is the vast majority of the people that they talk to about their new aspirations. We'll tell them that they cannot accomplish it, that they're wasting their time, that they shouldn't be so foolish as to think that they can rise above the average. We know also in studying the annals of good goal setters that one of the first things that you must learn when you begin setting goals is to keep your goals confidential. Don't tell anyone about them. The fear of criticism, the fear that we will be criticized by our friends and relatives for setting a new goal, stops us more than almost any other single factor from goal setting. So keep your goals to yourself with one exception. Share your goals only with those who are committed to achieving goals of their own and who are also committed to helping you accomplish your goals. Other than that, don't tell anybody so that nobody is in a position to criticize you and discourage you from doing it. The fourth reason why people don't set goals, and perhaps the most important reason of all, is the fear of failure. People do not set goals because they are afraid that they may fail. We have said earlier that the fear of failure is the greatest single obstacle to success in adult life, and it is because the fear of failure holds us back more than any other psychological anxiety, more than any other block, from ever setting a goal that will cause us to extend ourselves or to be and have and do more than we have accomplished in the past. And the reason that people fear failure is simply this. It is because people do not understand the importance of failure in achievement. The fact is that it is impossible to succeed without failing, that failure is an indispensable prerequisite for success, and that all great success is preceded by great failure, that if ever we wish to achieve our full potential as human beings, we have to be willing to risk failure over and over and over and over again, because there is no way that we can ever realize our full potential unless we have fallen on our face so many times that eventually we learn the lessons that are necessary for us to go on to our great achievements. In studying the lives and stories of the most outstanding men and women of all of history, we find that every single one of them has been a great failure. Every single one of them has had many, many years of trials and tribulations and adversity and setbacks and obstacles and disappointments. But in every single case, they picked themselves up and they learned from their failures and they carried on. And eventually, by persisting and carrying on, they finally broke through to the great successes that they had. Napoleon Hill, in his classic work, The Encyclopedia of Success, for which he interviewed over 500 of the most successful men and women in America, found that almost every single one of them achieved their greatest success just one step beyond where they had reached their greatest failure. Thomas Edison was the greatest failure in the history of invention. Thomas Edison failed more times and lost more money in experiments that were unsuccessful than any other inventor in modern history. And Thomas Edison was also the greatest inventor in modern history. He patented 1,097 devices at the U.S. Patent Office and made hundreds of millions of dollars for himself and countless others. Thomas Edison experimented over 10,000 times and failed over 10,000 times in his attempt to develop the carbon-impregnated filament which lighted the first incandescent light bulb. After his 5,000th experiment, and by the way, it's worthwhile noting that at the time Edison was conducting his experiments, the leading scientific minds of the day were writing in the scientific journals that Edison was out of his mind, that he was wasting his time, that there was no future in electric light. After his 5,000th experiment, a young journalist came to interview him and said, "Mr. Edison, why do you persist in wasting your time on these foolish experiments? Everybody knows that there is no future in electric light, that man was meant to light his way through life with kerosene lanterns." And he said, "Young man, you don't understand how the world works, but I want to tell you something. I have not failed at all." He said, "I have successfully identified 5,000 ways that will not work, which puts me just 5,000 ways closer to the way that will work." People don't realize that Edison experimented and failed over 17,000 times trying to develop the plant from which natural latex could be derived, the basis of our modern rubber industry. It is in understanding and embracing the concept of failure that we achieve true greatness as human beings. In the work that's been done on peak performance, we find an interesting thing, is that the natural tendency of the human being is to stay within the comfort zone. The natural tendency of the human being is to play it safe and not take chances. The natural tendency of the human being is to become satisfied and complacent with their current level of accomplishment and to try nothing more. And yet every single peak-performing human being, every single high-achieving man or woman has been a person who has thrown off the natural tendency to play it safe and to stay within the comfort zone and has continually tried to exceed their previous levels of accomplishment, has continually moved forward into the risk zone to try something more and bigger and better and more important, and that every single accomplishment in the history of man has come from men and women who have had the courage to take the risks to step out even though they had no guarantee or assurance of success. I think the best way is to look at life very much like a baseball game. Now, in a baseball game, when you step up to the plate, you get three strikes and you're out. But in the baseball game of life, it's different in that you are not only the batter, but you are also your own umpire. Even if you are a lousy batter, if you stand there and you swing long enough and you swing hard enough, by the law of averages, you must hit a home run. And remember, you are your own umpire. In the game of life, nobody can ever call you out but yourself. All you have to do is stand at that plate and keep swinging, and you must hit the ball over the fence. And the life history and the life story of every successful man or woman has been a person who just stood there and kept on swinging one more time and finally hit that ball out of the park. There's another reason why goal setting is so important. We talked earlier about control and how important control is. With regard to control, we know that the only thing in life that is inevitable is change. We can avoid taxes by not working, and with modern medicine and modern science, we can even put off death for a long time. But the one thing that we can never prolong or put off is change. Change is taking place continually, every day, every week, every month, and most of us fear change. Most of us are very uneasy about change, and for a very specific reason. We're afraid of change because we're afraid that as a result of change, we're going to be worse off than we were before the change took place. As they say, we all want things to stay the same, but to get better. Nobody fears change that is an improvement. If the change is that you've just won $1 million in the lottery, nobody fears that kind of change. But if our boss says, I want you in my office in 5 minutes, we're going to make some changes around here, that's the kind of change that makes us very, very uneasy. We have a tendency to fear change and to resist change because we are always afraid that change is going to lead to us being worse off afterwards than before. The reason that we set goals is that goals enable us to control the direction of change in our lives. We know that if we drive down the street, even on the flattest street, with an automobile with the most beautiful wheel alignment, if we drive down the street and we take our hands off the wheel for any period of time, what is going to happen to us? What is going to happen if we take our hands off the steering wheel of our own life for any period of time? Even if our automobile is perfect and the road is perfect, we are still eventually ultimately going to go into the ditch. We're going to go off the road. So the reason that we set goals is to enable us to control the direction of change and to assure that the direction of change in our lives is predominantly toward improvement rather than toward a deterioration in our conditions. It is impossible for us to control our lives without goals, and it is impossible for us to feel good about ourselves unless we feel that we are in complete control of the direction of our lives and of our destinies. Now, with regard to goal setting, there's two or three concepts that it's important to introduce. Number one is what we call the area of excellence. This is very, very important, and a good deal of research has been done on this subject in the last 3 or 4 years. But basically, the concept of the area of excellence simply says this. Every human being has talents and abilities that float around the average. We are a better driver and a worse cook and a better mother and a worse gardener and a better father and a worse carpenter and so on. But also it says that every single one of us is endowed by nature with the ability to achieve excellence or outstanding accomplishment in at least one or more specific areas. That every single person is put on the earth for a unique purpose. That nobody is created at random. That every one of us has something valuable and special to contribute to the human race. Every one of us can be excellent, can be outstanding in at least one area, and one of our major responsibilities as an adult is to find our area of excellence and to channel all our energies and abilities into becoming excellent in that one field. We know, for instance, that if we intend to make a living for the rest of our lives, then we have a responsibility to ourselves to develop excellence in at least one area of marketable skill. What astonishes us continuously in talking to people is that many people will work 5 and 10 and 20 years in a field or in a career or in an occupation, and it will never once occur to them that they should take the extra time and put in the extra effort to become excellent in their field of endeavor. The great tragedy of modern life is that most people walk around doing what they do in a mediocre fashion. It never occurs to them how important it is that they become outstanding at something. And the reason why this is so important is that, first of all, the only way that we can have any kind of job security in the course of our life in a rapidly changing society is by becoming outstanding at what we do. The top 20% in every classification in every field are never unemployed. The top 20% are always working and always have complete job and financial security. But more than that is we know that how much we like ourselves, how good we feel about ourselves as human beings, is a vital determinant on how well we do everything in life. It determines the quality of our interpersonal relationships. It determines our levels of health, our energy, our creativity. It determines our levels of stress. And we also know that if a person is not excellent at something, then that person gets up every morning and looks at themselves in the mirror and sees a person who is only mediocre at everything, and that it is impossible to fully like and value and accept ourselves as genuinely important and worthwhile human beings unless we know deep down inside that there is at least one thing in the world that we are good at. And we find again in studying the annals of achievement and the annals of success that every single successful man or woman that has ever made a contribution to the world in any area has found their area of excellence and channeled all their time and talent and ability and energy into becoming outstanding in at least one area, and there are no exceptions to that anywhere. So, in establishing our goals, one of our goals has to be to think in terms of where we can develop excellence. And let me say only two things that can help you decide that. First of all, that you can only become excellent doing what you love to do, and that one of our prime responsibilities is to find what we love to do as adult human beings, and then to spend the time and the effort and expend the energy becoming excellent in that area. And you can tell where your potential area of excellence is by looking at what interests you, looking at what attracts your attention, looking at the sort of things that you would do if you were not being paid for them at all, looking at the sort of things you would do if you had no limitations whatever on your abilities. And I'm going to give you a couple of questions in a few minutes that will help you clarify that area. The second concept is what we call the Acres of Diamonds concept. And the Acres of Diamonds concept comes from an essay and a speech written by a man named Russell Conwell around the turn of the century. The speech was so effective that he was ultimately asked to give it over 5,000 times, and it told the story of an old African farmer who had done extremely well in life, and one day he became very excited in hearing about people who had gone off into Africa and discovered diamond mines and become fabulously wealthy. So he sold his farm and decided to go off into Africa and to crown his life by finding a diamond mine and becoming fabulously wealthy. And so he wandered the vast African continent for 10, 12, 13 years, and finally, broke, alone, sick, tired, and exhausted, he threw himself into the ocean and drowned. Meanwhile, back on his farm, the new farmer one day was out watering a mule in a stream that cut across the farm, and he found a rock that threw off light in a remarkable fashion. It was later found to be a diamond of inestimable value. And the person who identified it as a diamond asked the farmer to take him back out and show him where he had found it. And he took him back out to the place where he had been watering the mule, and they found another. And lo, they found another, and another and another, and then they found that the whole farm was literally covered with acres of diamonds. The old farmer had gone off seeking diamonds somewhere else without ever looking under his own feet. And the moral of the story is that the reason the farmer went off looking for diamonds somewhere else is that he did not realize that diamonds didn't look like diamonds in their rough form. That diamonds in their rough form just simply looked like rough rocks, burnt fragments and charred remnants of coal. And that a diamond, in order to become a diamond, must be cut and shaped and polished and set in order to bring out its very best value. And that our major opportunities in life also come to us like rough diamonds. They say the reason why people miss their major opportunities when they come is they usually come disguised in work clothes or disguised as hard work. And that our major opportunities to achieve everything that we want to accomplish usually lie right under our own feet, not only in our own talents and abilities, but in our own industry, our own education, our own interests, our own background, our own connections, our own contacts, our own communities. Everything we want, everything that we could ever hope for, the realization of all of our ambitions is probably very, very close at hand, but it does not look like a diamond in its rough form. It will require work and planning and preparation and effort. It will require actually getting down in there with our hands and turn it into something worthwhile. So when you begin to set goals for yourself, don't think that you have to travel across the country or change industries or go back to school for 5 years to get a degree. Look right where you are and start right where you are, and in most cases, that's where you'll find your acres of diamonds too. Finally, with regard to goals, we know that each one of us has to have a balance of goals for a balanced life. Just the same way you disperse weight equally in an aircraft so that the airplane will fly in a balanced fashion, as mature adult human beings, we also have to have balanced goals, and we have to have about 3 to 5 goals in each of 3 major categories. The first major category is what we call family and personal goals. Now, these are the reasons why we do everything. These are our personal reasons, the reasons that we have to enjoy our lives, and they're also the things that we want to accomplish for our family. And they can be both tangible and intangible goals. They can be financial goals, and they can also be quality goals, spending more time with our family and our loved ones, for instance. The second type of goals are business and career goals. And these also can be both tangible and intangible. They can be earning more money. They can also be completing a course of study, achieving a certain level of recognition, writing a certain number of papers or proposals, or making a certain number of sales. But we have to have business and career goals if we're going to be successful in our financial life. And the third type of goals are self-improvement goals. As Dennis Waitley says in The Psychology of Winning, one of the characteristics of a winning human being is that they always look upon themselves as a do-it-to-yourself project, that they always have a series of self-improvement and self-development goals going on all the time. They either want to develop higher levels of physical health or develop concentration or memory or public speaking ability, but they're always looking upon themselves as an ongoing project, and they're always continually working to become better and smarter and more capable. Now, in setting goals, we know 2 or 3 other things, goals that have to be in harmony with each other, not contradictory. We cannot want to spend half of our time on the beach and also become wealthy and successful in our chosen occupation. We can't want to be able to climb in the mountains every day and yet live in the desert. So we have to set goals that are in harmony with each other, and also we have to set goals that are congruent with our basic and fundamental values. And some of the questions which we've developed that are very, very important in setting goals are the following 7. And I suggest what you do in listening to this program is take some time to write out the answers to these questions. If you are driving along listening to this program, think about the answers. Maybe even stop the program while you're driving along and think about what your answers might be. And by thinking through these answers, very often they will give you acute insights into what your major goals should be. The first question is this: what are the 5 things that you value the most in life? What 5 things do you consider to be the most important elements of your life? What 5 things would you pay the most for, would you sacrifice for, would you stand up for, would you fight for? What are the 5 most important values in your life? This is a very important question that very few people ever seriously consider, but it forms the foundation, if you like, for all the other goals that we set in our lives. The second question is this. In 30 seconds or less, write down the three most important goals in your life right now. What are the three most important goals in your life right now? This is what Joyce Brothers calls the quick list method. What she has found is that if you only have 30 seconds to write the answer to this question, the answers that you will write will probably be the most accurate, and they will be the three most important goals in your life. The next question is, what would you do if you won $1 million in the lottery tomorrow? What would you do if you won $1 million tax-free? In other words, if you had all the time and money in the world, how would you spend that $1 million? What would be the very first thing that you would do? What would be the second thing? What would you buy? What would you pay off? What changes would you make in your life if you won $1 million tomorrow? The answer to this question simply says, what would you do if you had no mental or physical limitations on your abilities? What would you aspire to? What would be your ambitions? What would be your dreams if you had no limitations at all? The purpose of this question is to point out and to remind you that anything that you wrote as an answer to this question, you can be, have, or do. The very fact that you could write the answer to this question means that you are capable of accomplishing it, not as rapidly as if you had won $1 million, but the question is, how badly do you want the answers to these questions? Because there is no limitation on what you can accomplish except the intensity of purpose that you put into it and the willingness that you have to put in the efforts that are necessary. The next question is, what would you do and how would you spend your time if you learned today that you only had 6 months to live? What changes would you make in your life? What would you do? Who would you see if you learned that you were going to live in perfect health for 6 months and on the 180th day you would drop stone dead? This is a very valuable question because the answer to it will tell you what you consider to be most valuable in your life. It will tell you what your true values are. When you start thinking about your life coming to an end, it is at that point that you begin to seriously reflect on what is most important to you. And the advice that we give to people is that if your three most important goals in life, and if what you would do if you won $1 million, are not the same as the answer to this question, what would you do if you only had 6 months to live, then it's very important that you begin to take a very close look at your goals, because if this is what you do if you only had 6 months to live, these goals should be incorporated into your day-to-day activities, because that is where the real value is in your life. The next question is, what have you always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt? What have you always wanted to do in your life, but you have been afraid to try it? You have held back, you have thought about doing it, but every time you thought of doing it, you've become uneasy and unsure and a little bit scared or a little bit frightened, so you've held back from doing it. That's the critical question, because whatever it is that you've wanted to do, remember that the fear that holds you back is simply a psychological fear, which is the result of a conditioned process, or if you like, a conditioned response to stimuli. It is a habit that holds you back. It is a fear of failure that has nothing to do with reality. And the next question is, in looking back over all the things that you've done in your life, what type of activities, doing what sort of things, in what sort of circumstances, gives you your greatest feeling of importance, your greatest feeling of mental well-being, your greatest feeling of self-esteem and self-worth? When you do it, you feel the very, very best about yourself. You feel great about yourself when you're engaging in this particular type of activity. Dale Carnegie said many years ago, "You tell me what gives a man or a woman their greatest feeling of importance, and I'll tell you their entire philosophy of life." But what gives you your greatest feeling of importance is also a key indicator of where your area of excellence is, because your area of excellence will always be in doing what gives you the greatest personal pleasure and feeling of self-esteem and self-satisfaction. And one of the high duties of life is to continually be steering and guiding our lives toward doing what gives us the greatest joy and satisfaction. And the final question is this. Imagine that you received one wish from a genie, or that you received a magic pill, and if you took this pill, you could accomplish any one thing in the whole world, that you could achieve any goal, realize any desire or any ambition that you ever had in the whole world, big or small, short-term or long-term. And the question is simply this: what one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew beyond the shadow of a doubt that you absolutely could not fail? This is one of the most important questions of all, because what this says is that this is really your great dream and your great ambition in life. And if you can write the answer to this question, it means that you can have it. The very fact that you can think clearly about what this answer might be and that you can write the answer down on paper means that you are capable of accomplishing it. Nature is not capricious, and nature does not, on the one hand, give us the ability to clearly visualize and write down a goal without at the same time giving us the ability to realize it. This is one of the most exciting things about the human psyche, but the very fact that you can crystallize your desire means that you can achieve it. The only question is, how badly do you want it, and are you willing to pay the price to get it? Because the only limitation is in your own mind. It is not contained in physical reality. After answering these questions, it is essential that you pick one major definite purpose in life. We know that all great success starts with selecting one major definite purpose. That if we make the mistake, as many people do, of trying to accomplish many things simultaneously, we find that we diffuse and disperse our efforts and end up accomplishing almost nothing. And every great life only becomes great when the individual picks one thing which is more important than all the other things put together, and the accomplishment of which will lead to the attainment of many of the other minor goals in life, and then commits all of their efforts and attention and energies to achieving that one thing. It's very important, if you have not set and achieved goals habitually in the past, that you develop the ability to set and achieve one important goal in your life, that you use the methods that we're talking about to achieve success in one critical goal. Once you've done that, it becomes relatively simple for you to set and achieve a second goal and a third goal and a fourth goal. But don't try to bite off too many things at once. Try to set and achieve just one goal and then go on from there. We have examined hundreds of studies on goal setting, and we have taken the very best steps and the very best concepts that have ever been developed in the history of goal setting by anyone, and we've combined them into the method which follows. This method is so powerful as a method for programming the subconscious at a deep level with your goal that if you will run your goal through this process, taking every single step in order, you will find that the speed at which you accomplish the goal will absolutely amaze you, and that you can accomplish more in 1 year using this methodology than you could in 4 or 5 years trying any other way. The first step in all goal setting is desire. The first step in changing any aspect of our lives is intense desire, or need, if you like. But desire is the great motivator. It is the great force that impels us toward our goals. So the first thing you have to do is set a goal that you intensely desire. And that was the purpose of the previous exercise. And remember, desire is only and always personal. So it must be something that you want for yourself. You can never desire anything for anyone else. It has to be a perfectly personal, selfish goal. Many times people say to me, how can I get my husband to do this or my wife to do that? And I refer them back to this part, and I say, what is the starting point of all change and all goal attainment? And they say, desire. And I said, that's right. And unless a person really sincerely desires to do or be or have something different, there is no way that anybody else can bring about that change for them. The second step is belief. And belief, as we know, is one of the most important single elements in goal attainment. And it means that you must absolutely believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that you have the ability to achieve the goal that you set for yourself. For this purpose, you have to make your goals believable. You have to make your goals realistic. You cannot set goals that are so far beyond your current levels of attainment that they are unbelievable to your conscious mind. Because if your conscious mind cannot accept the goal, there is no way that your subconscious mind will accept it and go to work on bringing it into reality. For instance, if you're earning $20,000 a year today, It would be foolish for you to set a goal of $100,000 or $1 million a year for your income tomorrow or next year. Instead, if you're going to increase your income, what you do is increase it in 50% increments. So if you're making $20,000 today, then develop an affirmation and a visualization that says, I earn $30,000 a year in the next 12-month period. $30,000 a year is an increment that is believable. It's possible to see your income increasing 50% over 12 months, and it's also possible for your subconscious then to go to work on bringing it into reality. If you wish to lose weight, for instance, you wouldn't try to drop from 200 pounds to 160 pounds in one affirmation or one visualization, but we find that if you will lose weight in 5-pound increments, start affirming yourself and visualizing yourself at 5 pounds less, day by day, week by week, and then as you achieve the first 5-pound loss, go to the next 5 pounds and the next 5 pounds and the next 5 pounds. This way, your goals are always believable. Dr. McClelland of Harvard says that your goals should have about a 50-50 probability of success. In other words, there should be about a 50% probability that you can attain the goal. That kind of a goal is easy to believe, easy to hold in your conscious mind, and easy for your subconscious to go to work on. The more you can develop an absolute conviction, a complete faith in your ability to achieve your goal, the more rapidly you move toward its attainment. Finally, with regard to belief, make your goals challenging and make your goals cause you to stretch. Each of your goals should be aimed at your next level of attainment or achievement. Remember, it is goals that make us stretch that cause us to move out of the comfort zone and that cause us to operate on the outer edge of our potential as a human being. So make the goals challenging. Don't make them easy, but also don't make them impossible. Make them so that you can believe them, so that you can see them, so that you can keep your mind concentrated on them, and make them so that you can develop an absolute conviction that they are attainable. The third step is to write it down. This is absolutely essential. As we said earlier, the vast majority of people never write their goals down in their entire lives. And you must look upon writing your goal down as the way you program the goal into the subconscious. The same way you sit at a keyboard and you type data into a computer, when you write out your goal, that's how you program that goal into the subconscious. And you must write the goal in complete detail. Write it in vivid, clear, precise detail, exactly as you wish to have it. For instance, if you want to have a big new house, you wouldn't say, I want a 3,000 square foot house. You would say, I want a 3,000 square foot split level house with 4 bedrooms, 1 living room, 1 dining room, a kitchen, a garage, a family room, and describe the yard and describe the home in complete precise detail so that your subconscious has a very, very clear representation of what you want to accomplish. The writing out of your goal is the most important single step that you take. Because until a goal is committed to paper, it is not a goal, it is simply a wish. And you can accomplish far more by writing your goals out clearly on paper than you can by carrying them around in your head for years and years. The fourth step is to determine how you will benefit from accomplishing your goal. Sit down and write out a very clear list of all of the advantages and benefits that you are going to enjoy as the result of achieving your goal. If your goal is a financial goal, then write out clearly the differences it will make in your life to achieve that financial goal. We know that if you have 1 or 2 reasons for achieving a goal, you'll have a little bit of motivation. If you have 5 or 10 reasons for achieving a goal, you'll have even more. If you've got 50 or 100 different reasons for accomplishing a goal, you will become almost irresistible. You will develop a force and a power and a conviction that makes you literally unstoppable in achieving that goal. So the more reasons that you can think of, the more benefits that you will enjoy from achieving that goal, the more desire you will have, and the greater and the deeper will be your intensity of belief and conviction that it is attainable. The next step is to analyze your position. Analyze where you are right now and measure your current status. For instance, if you want to lose weight, the first thing you do is weigh yourself to see how much you weigh. If you wish to earn a certain amount of money, sit down and figure out exactly how much you are earning today. If you wish to be worth a certain amount of money over a period of time, do a complete financial analysis of exactly how much you're worth today. And step number 6 is to set a deadline. Decide and determine exactly when it is that you are going to accomplish that goal, the latest outside date. Your major definite purpose in life should always be measurable, specific, and quantifiable. You should be able to count it, and you should be able to measure and know exactly how close you are to accomplishing it. Now, it's all well and good to say that I want to develop greater concentration or a better memory. That is an excellent goal, but as a major definite purpose, it's essential that your major definite purpose be very clear and specific and measurable so that you can quantify it and count it and measure your progress step by step as you move toward it. We said earlier that the feeling of being a winner, the feeling of moving toward the realization of our self-ideal, is one of the key elements in a high, healthy, positive self-concept. The only way that we can feel like a winner is when we are moving toward the accomplishment of a meaningful goal. As Earl Nightingale has said, happiness is the progressive realization of a worthy goal or ideal, which means that it is the progressive step-by-step moving toward the accomplishment of something that's important to us. And unless we can clearly measure the beginning point and the end point and the steps in between, we will lose the great motivational power that lies in a major definite purpose. Step number 7 in goal setting is to identify the obstacles you will have to overcome in order to achieve your goal. To accomplish any goal of consequence, there are always obstacles that we have to overcome in order to achieve it. If there are no obstacles, it's not a goal at all. It's simply an activity. Once you've identified the obstacles, you will find that the obstacles that loom large in your mind when you're thinking about them, when you write them down on paper, look to be very small. Many people have found that by writing out a very clear list of all the obstacles that stand between them and their goal, that there's only one or two things on that list that are of any consequence, and all the rest are small and insignificant and can be dealt with easily once they're written down on paper and analyzed. Step number 8 is to clearly identify the knowledge you will require in order to accomplish your goal. Today, any goal of any consequence will require additional knowledge for its attainment. Any goal of any significance is going to require that you learn something new, something additional, that you get additional market research, that you read additional books, that you talk to other people, and it's important that you clearly identify what you are going to have to learn to be capable of accomplishing and attaining and holding on to that goal. Step number 9 is to clearly identify the people, groups, and organizations whose cooperation and assistance you will need in order to attain your goal. This is perhaps the most important step of all, and it introduces 3 more laws. The first law is one that you are very familiar with, the law of sowing and reaping, what is called the law of return. It says that whatever you sow, so also shall ye reap. And it also says that you only reap as a result of having sown in previous periods. That what you are reaping today in your life is a result of what you have sown in the past, and what you reap in the future is a result of what you sow now. The law of return says the more that you put in, the more you're going to get out, and that you have to put in before you get out. The second law is what we call the law of compensation. And the law of compensation simply says that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. When we are analyzing the people whose cooperation and assistance we require, we have to ask ourselves, what can we do for them in order to get them to cooperate with us? What can we put in which is our share that by the law of compensation is going to assure that we get our return back? And the third law in goal attainment is what we call the law of service. That in order to achieve any kind of lasting glory or distinction or fame or fortune in life, we can only do it by serving our fellow men with goods and services that are of value and importance to them. And that all successful men and women have begun in their minds with thinking and concentrating on how they can serve others. And they have practiced not only the law of compensation, that you get what you give, but the law of overcompensation. They have determined in advance to go the extra mile and always to do more than they are paid for. When you decide that you want to achieve a major definite purpose, the starting point of all riches and all success is to concentrate on what you can give, how you can serve, how you can contribute, how you can compensate and reward others in return for what you want. The unsuccessful men and women, the people who spin their wheels all their lives, always get the process backwards. They think in terms of what they can get out of a situation rather than on what they can put in order to earn something out of the situation. Many wealthy men and women have said that the most important single secret of all success is to do more than you're paid for, and to do it willingly, and to do it gladly, and to go the extra mile to reward and to compensate other people in order to get them to cooperate with you. In Peters and Waterman's book, In Search of Excellence, they found in studying 42 of the most excellent companies in America that every single one of those companies had an obsession with customer service. They spent all of their time thinking continually about how they could increase the quality and quantity of the service that they rendered to their customers. And that was the distinguishing characteristic of every single one of the excellent, high-performance, highly profitable corporations. If we as individuals want to be high achievers in our life, all we have to do is do what the winners have done from time immemorial, which is to concentrate on giving. And remember, in the Bible it says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And believe me, it is also more profitable to give than to receive, because if we do our share, just like the farmer knows, if he does his share of planting the seed, that the harvest will come by the law of nature. If we do our share by putting in and contributing and focusing on contribution and on giving value, our harvest will come by exactly the same law. Step number 10 is to take all the details that you've identified in the last three steps and to make a plan. Make a plan and make it complete in every detail. Write out all of the activities that you are going to have to engage in order to accomplish your goal. Once you have written out the activities, then itemize and list the activities in terms of their priorities, which ones are more important than others, and in terms of time, which things you have to do first and which things you have to do second. All plans are simply lists of activities laid out in terms of time and priority. Once you have made your plan and committed it to paper, then continually go back to it, review it, and rewrite it over and over again until it is a perfect plan. Remember that no plan that has ever been written has been perfect the first time. When you get new information, when you get new experiences, when you get feedback, when you begin to move forward and you make mistakes and you have disappointments and setbacks and obstacles, then sit back and look at the plan and see where the plan needs to be revised. All great achievers plan and think on paper. All great achievers write and rewrite their goals, and all high-achieving men and women plan over and over again. You will find them early and late. They plan their days, they plan their weeks, they plan their months. They're always planning, which is one of the reasons why they move ahead more rapidly than anyone else. Step number 11, which is appropriate at this time, is to get a clear mental visualization, a clear mental image of your goal as already attained, as already accomplished. Get a clear picture that you can hold in your mind of your goal as though it were already in existence right now. And every single day, every single time you get a chance, play that picture of the goal on the screen of your mind. Play it over and over and over again so that every time you have a spare moment, you're flashing that picture on your mind. That mental picture, that visualization of your goal as though it were already in reality is the most important single step of all the steps we've talked about so far. Every single step up to now brings us to the point where we are capable of forming an absolutely clear, vivid, distinct mental image that we can carry around in our brain. And we will achieve the goal to the exact degree to which we are capable of seeing it with complete clarity within our minds. And the more we think about it, the more clear and precise and sharp that image will become, and the more it will come into our lives. And finally, step number 12 is back your plan with determination and persistence and resolve to never, never, never give up. They say that the best plan on earth will not work unless you do. And many people will go through all of the steps up to step 11, but then they will become easily discouraged. They will quit at the first sign of defeat. And we know that all great attainment and all great achievement was only accomplished with persistence. Napoleon Hill says that the quality of persistence is to the character of man as carbon is to steel. And I'll only say two things about persistence because it's been spoken about and written about over and over again. The first thing is to understand that no matter how perfect your plan and no matter how pure your heart, every single individual who has ever tried to accomplish anything outside the ordinary has suffered setback and obstacle and defeat and adversity and disappointment and heartache over and over again as they have moved toward their goal. There is no record of anybody ever having achieved any kind of success without having failed over and over again. The only difference is that the winners continually pick themselves up and carry on knowing that ultimate success is inevitable as long as they keep on keeping on. The second point is to remember this. Self-discipline is persistence in action. We've talked before about self-discipline being the underlying quality of all success and achievement. Self-discipline is persistence in action. You can see how much self-discipline you have by how persistent you are at working towards your goal. And finally, remember this, that your persistence is your measure of your faith in yourself. That your persistence is the direct measure of how much you believe in yourself and in your ability to succeed. And you can tell how much you believe in yourself by how ready and willing you are to pick yourself up after every disappointment and to carry on. Because if you will pick yourself up every time, there is literally nothing that can stop you. Once we've clearly defined our goals and clearly determined our major definite purpose, the next essential step in goal attainment is effective time management. We know that all high achievers use their time well. All winners use their time very well. All losers waste or diffuse their time and their efforts. Now, there are six key characteristics of effective time management. We have taught 1 and 2 day courses on time management, and the very best elements of time management are contained in these 6 points. Point number one in effective time management is clear, specific, measurable goals. The greatest waste of time in our lives is having only a vague or no idea of what it is we're supposed to accomplish. You'll be absolutely astonished in working with corporations how few people working for any given company have any really clear idea of what they're supposed to be doing. The greatest time waster of all is to be working very, very hard doing something that shouldn't even be done at all. So clear, specific goals is step number one. Step number two is clear, detailed plans. Again, we have formulated clear, detailed plans in the last 12 steps, but it is absolutely essential that we make clear plans before we start toward the attainment of any objective. We would never think of hiring a builder and taking him to a building site and giving him several truckloads of building materials and saying, "Build me a house." The first thing that the builder would ask us is, "Where's the plans?" And we would be foolish to try to build a successful life without specific detailed plans of what we want to accomplish and what we expect it to look like when we have completed and realized the goal. Step number three is to make a list every single day before you start work. All good time planners use lists. As a matter of fact, all good managers of time work from lists every single day. The best time to make a list is to plan your week in advance on Saturday or Sunday. Make your lists the night before for the following day so that the subconscious can work on it during the night and organize the materials and bring you answers and solutions to the problems and challenges that you'll face. Then when you start off your day, refuse to do anything that is not on the list. Discipline yourself to write every new assignment, every new responsibility down on the list before you start it. You'll find that when you write it down on the list, it does not seem as urgent or as important as when you are reacting to it. If you do not use a list, you will find yourself responding to the urgent rather than doing the important. You will find yourself preoccupied with what is called the trivial many versus the vital few. And it's essential that you make a list and that you work on that list and you carry it all day long. Two benefits will come from using a list. First of all, you'll be more organized all day long, and you will feel better about yourself, and you'll get more done. Second of all, at the end of a day, when you've used a list, and you have ticked off all the different things you've done as you've gone down that list, you will have a very good feeling of accomplishment, a good feeling of attainment. You will feel good about yourself. You will feel that you are on top of your work and in control of your life. If you don't use a list, you'll be continually pulled from one side to the other. You'll be continually responding to interruptions and telephone calls. And at the end of the day, you'll have this terrible feeling that you've just been spinning your wheels all day long. And you'll be tired, you'll be fatigued, you'll be tense, and you'll be stressful because you know that you have made no real progress toward accomplishing your major tasks. All you've done all day long is trivia. If you do not now use a list, the first day that you start using a list, you will increase your productivity by at least 25%. At the end of each day, what you do is you take the items that are still left on your list and you transfer them to your list for the next day. Not using a list is one of the major causes for insomnia in our society. How many times have you stayed awake at night, tossing and turning, trying not to forget something that you have to do the next day because it is not written down anywhere? When you write out that list at the end of the day, it clears your mind, it sweeps it clean, and leaves your mind completely fresh and relaxed, and you can sleep like a baby at night. Step number 4 in effective time management is to set priorities on your list. Use the 80-20 rule developed by Vilfredo Pareto in 1895. He found that 80% of the value of any list of activities was contained in 20% of the activities. In other words, if you have 10 things to do in a given day, 80% of the value of those 10 things will be contained in approximately 2 and sometimes only 1 of those things. So always use the 80-20 rule and concentrate on the 20% of items that you have to accomplish that are worth 80% of the value of everything that you have to do. Always set priorities and concentrate on the most valuable use of your time. And use this question. This is the most important single question in time management and personal effectiveness. And it is simply this: what is the most valuable use of my time right now? What is the most valuable use of my time right now? Whenever we have to choose amongst activities, it's always to do one or the other, to do A or B. And before we pick up either A or B, we use the test question: what is the most valuable use of my time right now? And only do what is the most valuable use of your time. Anything less than the most valuable use of your time is relatively a waste of time and a waste of your life. And all top time managers, all effective men and women, all high achievers focus their attention always on the most valuable use of their time because they know there is never enough time to do everything, but there is always enough time to do the important things. And this is really critical. One of the things that I do sometimes after writing out my list of activities, I'll look at the list and I'll say, if I was to be called out of town tomorrow and I would not be back for a month, and I could only do one thing on this list before I left, what one thing would I be sure to get done? And then I'll put a circle around that. That'll make it very clear to me what my top priority is. And if I have more time than is required for that, I'll say, if I could only do one more thing on this list before I was called out of town for a month, what would be the second thing to do? And sometimes I'll do this for 2 or 3 or 4 items, and then I'll have a very clear order of priority of what I should be doing with my time. And I'll know that anything that is not working on those top 1, 2, or 3, or 4 items is a waste of my time and I'm spinning my wheels. Point number 5 in time management, which underlies all outstanding accomplishment, is concentration and single handling. It is developing the ability to concentrate single-mindedly on one thing at a time and do it until it is finished. Peter Drucker, in his book, The Effective Executive, says that effective executives do first things first and they stay with them until they are complete. They do things one at a time and they do them until they're finished. Ineffective time managers often get to the point of establishing their top priority, but then they pick it up and put it down and pick it up and put it down and start it and stop it and pick it up and put it down and end up spending 3 and 4 and 5 times the amount of time necessary to get that thing accomplished. So do everything possible to get blocks of time to identify your most important priority and then to sit down and stay with it, single-handle it, as Mackenzie says in The Time Trap, and stay with it until it is complete. If you'll do that and do things one at a time, you'll find you can get more work done and more valuable work done in a day than some people get done in a week. Concentrate without diversion or distraction. Persevere. Stick with it. Use your self-discipline and use all of the strength of character you have to stay with the most important thing until it's finished. By doing that, you'll find that you will get so much done, you'll just be amazed with yourself. Two other characteristics of good time managers. Number one is to develop a sense of urgency, and this is absolutely vital. A sense of urgency means that whenever you have something to do, you get on with it, and you get on with it right now. You do it now. You overcome procrastination by whenever something comes up, you immediately say to yourself, do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now. Don't put it off. Don't delay. Jump on a task and do it this minute. Less than 2% of people in our society have a sense of urgency. Less than 2% of people in our society, in our workplace, will do a thing the first time it comes up. Almost everybody engages in automatic procrastination. Whenever it comes up, they immediately put it off, even though it is small, even though it's irrelevant, even though it could be done this second, they automatically put it off to a secondary time period. If you want to distinguish yourself and stand out amongst your peers, one of the fastest and easiest ways you can do it in any corporation, in any business of value, is simply to take everything that you are given and do it this minute and get on with it now. Say to yourself, I do it now. I do it now. I do it now. I do it now. And I can assure you that when the big responsibilities come along and when your boss or your customers need something important and they need it done in a hurry, they always go to the person whom they know is going to do it fast, and they'll always pay more, and they'll always respect the person far more than the individual who gets it done next week or the day after tomorrow or somewhere else. If I could only instill in every person who wants to be successful in the business world this one characteristic, it would be to clearly focus on what is important and to develop that sense of urgency and to do things quickly, to get on with them, to not procrastinate or delay. As they say, procrastination is the thief of time, and more people have become successful in competition with many others by developing that fast tempo, that sense of urgency, than perhaps through any other quality. It will certainly outstrip intelligence that is slow. It will certainly outstrip educational ability or educational qualifications. The person who will do things fast will always have the leading edge. Those are the key characteristics of effective time management, which if you attach them to your goal setting and goal accomplishing process, will move you more rapidly toward the attainment of your goals than you ever dreamed possible. When you start to set goals, although you don't look forward to it, expect that there will be disappointments, delays, and setbacks. Resolve to meet every single one of those temporary defeats with a determination to overcome them and to persist and to carry on. Keep yourself up and keep yourself positive by continually thinking about your goals, talking about your goals. Keep your goals foremost in your mind. As someone once said, obstacles are what you see when you take your mind off your goal. That's very important. Remember, the conscious mind can only hold one thought at a time, positive or negative, and a goal is a positive thought. No matter what happens, always think about your goal. You find that it's impossible to worry about petty anxieties and stresses and parking tickets and little complaints that seem to plague most people when you're thinking about your goal all the time. You find when you take your mind off your goal that you'll see all the little problems and irritations of life. Get your mind back on your goal, and your mind suddenly crystallizes and becomes clear. You become positive. You become energetic. You become enthusiastic. Encourage everybody else who has a goal. When somebody talks to you about their goal, tell them, go for it. Congratulations. That's terrific. Encourage everybody who is also goal setting. Encourage your children to set goals. Women who live at home or to take care of their children should also have goals. We encourage husbands and wives to sit down and to set clear goals for the two of them, and then for each of them to set specific goals for themselves, because every individual must have their own goals. Help your children to set worthwhile and realistic goals and talk to them about it and encourage them to think about their goals and accomplish their goals every day. Become a goal-setting machine, because it is setting goals continuously, thinking about goals all the time, that moves us out of the comfort zone, that raises our self-image, that moves us toward our self-ideal, that causes us to like ourselves, and that moves us toward peak performance and the full realization of our potential as human beings.